Welcome to Go Radio 3.6.
A very professional podcast.
I was unmuted. I did not know. At least I didn't say something terrible. It's pretty
always
much,
the silver lining.
I got through another podcast without like condemning myself to a life of solitude. That's cool.
You only hem and haw on the genocide. That's good.
Thank you, Ace.
You're welcome.
We are live. We are at Jolly Pumpkin. We are upstairs. We have one fan. We have one fan who is here. We also have Nick Hopwood from Peak Wealth Management, who will buy you a beer if you show up. There are tickets and everything, and he's a nice guy. Very, very, very fit guy, so that's a change for us.
Indeed.
But anyway, we're upstairs, Jolly Pumpkin. Come by in the next couple hours and have a free beer and make us feel less lonely. Nobody can make me feel less lonely. I probably shouldn't have said that out loud. Sponsors are Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Eco-Telligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. So, Ace, Indiana, defeated once again.
Mm-hmm. And once again, in an extremely painful fashion.
So, yeah, I thought about this for like the last 15 years. So... If Michigan gets in trouble against Northwestern or Indiana or usually Minnesota, they're going to pull it out.
Because they're a superior football team.
No, just because they got ass lucky. Remember the Roy Roundtree thing?
Well, yeah. That
the Dilio power slide?
You know. Yeah. Yeah. Especially with Indiana, you have to go back to like Northwestern 2000 for something crazy weird that went against Michigan in one of those games.
And, yeah. But so like the last 15 years, we're talking about, okay, they're not a very good football team, but they get in a lot of scraps. And they win all these scraps against the teams that, you know, you don't really care about.
You've got the Illinois shootout. You've got like the Ben Chappell Indiana teams like keeping up.
And then like every time it's like, okay, we're in a dogfight with Michigan State again. Or we're like unexpectedly going for a 2-point conversion to win against Ohio State. That never comes through.
No.
So we
of
got
course
the punt stuff, the monsoon stuff, the like 65 fumbles stuff. I would just really like if the luck was concentrated more towards the top end of the schedule instead of like...
Yeah, at this point, I'd take some upset losses to balance out.
Yeah, seriously, if that's what's going to happen, if we need to lose this Indiana streak so that we get 5 turnovers against Ohio State, I'm taking
it.
Yeah,
every time at this point.
But, I mean, here we are.
But, you know, it was nice to win against Indiana.
It was nice to win against Indiana. And
that was going
to
be a long drive home otherwise.
Mostly kind of deserve it.
Yeah.
I mean, outgained them.
There was some funky stuff on both sides, but...
Punt return wipes out a lead that looked fairly impregnable. And in the aftermath, the defense seems exactly like the defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, 15 drives against, 20 points...
Game-sealing goal line stand.
Two of those drives start at the Michigan 25 and the Michigan 20. And it's just kind of par for the course, the exception being they're playing a different kind of offense.
Yeah.
They're playing a passing spread, basically, and one that hasn't quite imbibed all the deboredness. It's still basically what Kevin Wilson was teaching last year.
Yes, just with less creative play calling.
I mean, there's always kind of a 1-year grace period where if a successful guy leaves, the guy who replaces him just keeps doing the same stuff for about a year. And then
yeah, I mean, Denard still ran a lot in 2011.
Right, until they decided to change that in the Iowa game. I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, sorry. That was just, you know, one example.
So this is still a passing offense that can be efficient. I mean, you have Simi Cobbs going off for 11 catches and 150 yards in like 2 quarters against Ohio State.
Yeah.
And Michigan's cornerbacks shut him down.
Completely.
Would you like to add any more to that thought?
I mean,
you're live in the press box. You have a view of the game that I actually didn't have.
Yeah, yeah. I think the most impressive thing was from up there, I was watching the coverage downfield quite a bit, especially since we did have a TV up there, and I did note how close they were panning in. So it was like, well, right. This might be useful. And it was shocking how little they had downfield. Because the rest of their receivers aren't great, but Cobbs is a legitimate NFL, like, talent.
Yeah.
And David Long was hanging with him, LaVert Hill was hanging with him, and Brandon Watson was hanging with him. I mean, they were willing to put all three of those guys on Cobbs. And at no point was there a time where it was like, man, like, Ramsey really missed something there.
Yeah.
And they're playing the ball well while it's there. I mean, you have Watson, you know, the most dangerous play Cobbs had, Watson ran him 2 yards out of bounds, and the ref somehow let that go for a play until finally getting it right on review. But that was great close. Coverage. I mean, when you get a fly route and make it so the guy has no choice but to run around you voluntarily on the sideline,
right.
You've won handily.
And Long was winning so handily that Cobbs was just
kind of back shouldering it at him.
And right, and they're giving up on like the best route that they have, and they're trying to these back shoulders that they can't complete. Like even the overtime pass interference on Long, I thought was great coverage.
Yeah,
where he knows it's going to be a fade, and so he's like, all right, you don't get to run this. And multiple times they're trying to hit that fade, and it's just as soon as the ball goes up, you know nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And then LaVert Hill has the interception.
Yeah, the textbook perfect coverage.
He almost has a second interception, which I thought was called back fairly.
He got a little handsy at the top of the route.
He yanked the guy back by his jersey. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if that wasn't called.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of those things are subtle and can be screened off from the referees.
But if Rashard Fant's interception was a penalty, then that certainly was.
Well, so. I don't even think that was – even in that world. Like, that just looked like –
I mean,
pretty good coverage.
Yeah, you know, got a gift there.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of a gift there.
But every time that a cornerback was called into service, he excelled.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of blips here and there, but, you know, we're 6 games into this season, and Michigan seems to have 3 cornerbacks that range from great to good.
Yeah, that's definitely beating expectations heading into the season. And I think you noted in the UFR that there were a couple times where when they went into nickel or dime, they'd play all 3 corners out there at the same time and lift Khalik Hudson, which is not something we've really seen yet, but shows how much they trust those guys.
Yeah, so passing downs, you're seeing Hill in the slot, and that's working out pretty well. And, you know, under 5 yards an attempt against an offense with Simi Cobbs. And, again, like 150 yards in about 2 quarters against Ohio State until they just started dedicating 2 players to him on every play. And Michigan didn't really do that.
No.
Like, they had a guy who was kind of, like, checking sometimes on posts and stuff, but they were very comfortable just letting Cobbs go one-on-one with whoever, no matter how much space he had.
Yeah, like that Watson play that we talked, I mean, he's pretty much all alone on one side of the field there against Simi Cobbs.
There isn't a guy within 30 yards of those dudes. And
there aren't a lot of teams that be comfortable even aligning that way.
No. But Michigan is, and they press Simi Cobbs the whole game and 4 catches for 39 yards?
Yeah, somewhere right around there.
On 10 attempts and several other plays that didn't actually end up in a Cobbs attempt, but Cobbs is the first read, and then then Ramsey has to scramble. So a major step forward I don't know if it's a step forward, but it's a lot of data that we now have that says that Michigan's cornerbacks are not a problem at all.
Yeah.
And that just leaves the safeties, really. Like, everything else on this defense looks somewhere between A- and A+.
Yeah.
And the safeties look a little bit hinky.
Yeah, we had, like, you know, another Tyree Cannell over-aggressive missed tackle in this game that turned, like, a give-up and punt into an almost first down.
Yeah, a little dangerous there.
But they're still coming up with enough positive plays. And then, like, the Josh Metellus, like, I don't know how you let this guy slip by you on the sideline moment.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, they're not making enormous mistakes, really. Like, I mean, we saw with Indiana when they got gashed on the long Higdon touchdown, a big part of that was a safety sprinting up towards the line and choosing the wrong side and giving up the middle of the field.
Yeah, both those safeties got split.
And we haven't seen anything like that from Michigan this year. All of a sudden, guys just jetting past everybody.
And it is important to note that I give a lot of coverage positives when guys can't see anything and they just kind of scramble out. And I don't know who's covering who because it's off the screen.
Yeah, and in this game, everything in the defensive backfield was off the screen.
But so those guys are also playing a role in some very huge coverage positives. I think they're good players. I think all 3 of them are good players. And we just keep coming back to them because there's almost literally nothing to complain about on the rest of the defense.
Yeah. I mean,
like, what? Like, invent a complaint from this game that is not about the safeties.
Maurice Hurst wasn't quite good enough.
No, come on.
Football
Focus best defensive player in the country.
I was kidding. There is a noticeable drop off to the backup defensive lineman.
That's it. That's actually the most reasonable complaint. That's not about the
and it's
safeties.
A real one. And it's mostly about how good the starting defensive line is, but also Indiana did get a touchdown drive where they tempoed and got Carlo Kemp and Aubrey Solomon stuck on the field.
Yeah, I mean, Solomon had one bad play in there where he wasn't ready for tempo. He had a good play.
Also had a good play, yeah.
So even the guys that aren't playing at the level of the starters, I think it does say something that Michigan is willing to rotate them in.
Yeah.
So they had, I think, probably 8 or even maybe 9 backup guys get in if you count, the third quarter, whoever that is.
Yeah.
So you saw Uche get in. You saw Gil get in for a play when McCray was kind of cheap-shotted. And then you saw Kemp and Solomon and Marshall and Dwumfor and Jamarick Woods.
Yep.
So all of these guys got in the game, and only 2 of them were injury replacements. The rest of them are guys that Michigan is playing on purpose.
Yeah.
And so you're getting a little bit of hope there that maybe they'll have some depth in case they get an injury or they get stuck on the field for a long period of time on a Georgia Tech drive or something.
Yeah.
So a good sign for this defense going forward this year, but mostly for the future.
Yeah. I mean, they've built some functional depth, but just to see some of the younger guys start to break through, you know they're not getting on the field in a close game unless they've shown something.
Right, and they're turning in plays here and there. So Ambry Thomas had good coverage. I forgot about Ambry Thomas.
Yeah.
Ambry Thomas had good coverage on a slant that he couldn't quite break up. You know, Dwumfor had a good pass rush.
And they trusted Dwumfor enough to have him in on, Indiana's final drive.
Yeah, he's their if they're going to go to a 4-man line, they play him instead of Monet as, a
pass rusher. Yeah.
So, I mean, other than this defense is doing it to a different style of offense, I think your biggest takeaways are cornerbacks are getting towards awesome and that they're building a little bit of depth. Also, I thought Rashawn Gary had a bit of a breakout.
Yeah.
It's only a bit of a breakout because he's been playing very well, but I had him scoring highest of all the defensive linemen. He should have had a sack. He did have 2.5 tackles for loss. I think he had a sack in there too, but he should have another one.
Yeah.
So he's really starting to translate his production to box score stats.
Yeah, he was starting to do stuff like both sides, read options, and make plays on him where it's like, yeah, that was what we were expecting to see.
Yeah, and he's doing speed to power on the edge, which is something that I think we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Because, if you're worried about an edge rush for that guy and you're oversetting, he's just going to toss you into the lagoon.
Yeah, so let's see him take a few more offensive tackles for a ride.
And then Devin Bush isn't scoring in the stat department the last couple of weeks, but he's playing at the same level.
Yeah. And he should have ended this game.
He should have, yeah.
this is not a superlative performance from the officials.
No. Do you want to get into that?
I mean, he comes flying in, should have had a game-ending sack, has got Ramsey pretty much in his clutches, and Ramsey just kind of whirls around and chucks the ball into no man's land. And if you're talking about area of the receiver, we're talking a large area here.
Yeah, there's a screenshot that I have where there's literally nobody on the screen
and
when the ball hits the ground.
Yeah, so, I mean, I remember live that there was a receiver in the general direction just off of where your screen probably ended.
Yeah, he was about 8 yards away.
But if you're trying to, if you're enforcing the intent behind that penalty, you're calling that every time. Because there's no way. I don't even think he could have possibly seen the receiver before he let that go. He was getting whirled around.
No, it's it was
so he just
frustrated.
Chucked it. And then, that should come with, a runoff and a loss of down. And that totally changes the complexion of the game.
So my favorite thing from the referees in this game was after the Maurice Hurst personal foul, they marked off 13 yards.
Which is not the distance for any foul in the rule book.
And I'm charting this, and they're at the 29, and then they're at the 16, and I'm like, that's not 15 yards, and it's also not half the distance.
No. But they tried. The refs really tried in this game.
He did. The only thing that really
they succeeded in throwing a record-setting number of flags against Michigan. So
I did get pretty fired up because they have a tunnel screen. And they've already been called for this once in the game where the offensive lineman comes out and then cut blocks on the edge, which is not legal.
No.
And McCray takes one right on his knee, and I think you understand
that's what
why
knocks him
it's
out.
Not legal.
Yeah.
And, you know, he goes out for a play, and I'm like, that didn't look like he did something terrible, but if he accidentally gets that leg caught and plants, he could be out for the year.
Yeah.
And they don't call that. And I'm like,
You guys saw that earlier. What's happening?
You know, it's one thing if it's pass interference. It's another thing entirely if it's player safety.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a player safety issue, and that should be a major black mark on them. And there are many other very frustrating and comical things, like the Metellus thing.
Yeah.
The receiver went out of bounds. It was a grim, grim refereeing performance.
Yeah. And it wasn't just, you know, like we mentioned, their Rashard Fant got hit with one of the most BS pass interference calls I've ever seen.
And Michigan,
on a pick, so it
Michigan
was going both ways.
A couple of holding calls.
They did.
That were extreme holding calls.
A little bit obvious.
Meanwhile, the offense.
If we must.
So the thing that really leapt out at me as I was doing this game is the way that Michigan kind of dumbed down their passing offense.
Yeah.
So a ton of max protection, a ton of 1-2 receiver routes, and 1.5 receiver routes sometimes. And if Okorn can't make a second read on something with two receivers, I don't know what you can do with him.
Yeah, that's a high school passing game at that point, and he's not really executing it, so I don't know what you're supposed to build off of that. But that was rough to watch. I mean, you know, we discussed it ad nauseum, but the two-man route where he misses Gentry,
right,
just kind of summed up that game, from a passing offense perspective. And that, I mean, he's all day to survey. There's two options. One of them's got two guys on him. One of them's got pretty much nobody. I mean, if he doesn't have a quick hook, then I don't know what's going on at this point.
Well, one thing that kind of leapt out to me once I started doing it is the throws he didn't attempt. So Michigan has a lot of max protection stuff and play action, and it looks like on two or three separate plays, there are safeties at 8 yards, and they're stepping up.
Yeah.
Once Michigan shows run action.
Indiana was starting to get Air Force aggressive there a little bit.
Right. And he doesn't load up and throw. Like, I assume that he's got Donovan Peoples-Jones on a post. And maybe he's covered, but he's single covered. And
what's the point of these plays? Like, you've got this super athletic five-star freshman who has track star speed and can jump out of the building. Throw it up to him. See what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst thing that happens is you just functionally punted the ball. And since Michigan was doing a lot of that anyway, I mean, why not?
It was mystifying. It looked like a guy who didn't have a lot of faith in his command of the offense, or
and maybe not a lot of faith in his deep ball after he missed DPJ on a would-be touchdown early.
I mean, he missed, but he didn't like.
He didn't miss horribly, it is hard to overthrow that guy. But
true,
and I don't know what I'm just trying to come up with explanations for why he wouldn't throw these passes when they're the intent of the play.
Yeah, and Michigan goes away from the passing game almost entirely in the second half, and that's a luxury they have because they're ahead.
And the running game's actually working in this game, too.
Yeah, and I don't know if they can do that when they're behind. Like, if they get behind by two touchdowns against Penn State, they have to open it up.
Yeah.
And is that going to be Okorn trying to make it work, or is it going to be more time for Brandon Peters? I don't know. I mean, I don't think that Brandon Peters is immediately going to be a revelation and much better than Okorn.
No, especially not if you're throwing him in against Penn State in a rough situation. I mean, Penn State's got a top five passing defense right now. That's a really hard situation to throw a kid into.
So if you've got 10 points in the third quarter and you need to score and you haven't been able to score at all since the Purdue game, you know, it's at that point you might have to think about making a move.
Yeah, absolutely.
The better news on offense is that they did have a functional ground game. Didn't grade out as well in the blocking, but the running backs were collectively about plus 20, led by Karan Higdon. Got it right.
Yeah, hey. first time.
Who had like a plus 16 as he goes off for 200 yards. About, I'd say 50 of those were his and his alone.
Yeah.
He got some help. Michigan brought out that counter in the fourth quarter for the quickie touchdown drive.
Yeah, and that 59-yard touchdown was beautifully blocked in addition to being an RPS win.
Yeah, and what really struck me about Higdon on that play is he just blew through those guys.
Yeah. And you know, he's fast.
As soon as he got past those guys, there was no question if he was going to get caught from behind.
Yeah.
And I know they're just Indiana safeties, but that looked like pretty good long speed to me.
Yeah, he was doing the thing where, you know, you look up at the scoreboard if it's in the end zone you're running towards to kind of, you know, check your tail.
Right.
And it was totally unnecessary on that play. There was nobody within 20 yards of him. But he still took a peek. I thought this was a super encouraging day in the run game, both because the offensive line, they may not have graded out as high as you first thought, but I thought they still had a pretty good game. Mike Onwenu is really coming on strong. But then to have the running backs actually creating their own yards, the overtime touchdown was a bust.
Yeah.
I mean, Patrick Kugler goes the wrong way. And Higdon has to just kind of – the first tackle just kind of – the defender doesn't expect you to bounce off your own center. But the second one, he legitimately jukes a guy to the ground and then gets the corner. That was pretty.
I mean, a lot of my minuses were concentrated minuses, so it wasn't like, okay, they got 4 yards and this guy got a minus one, and so the running game is kind of stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were some plays that got super blown up, and then there were –
it almost seemed like they blew a couple line calls there potentially.
Maybe. I mean, definitely on – so there was like a 7-yard loss for Evans on Michigan's last play of regulation.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kugler pulls, and then the guy that Kugler pulled away from just goes and runs directly at Chris Evans. And it's like, not ideal.
No.
And then Kugler makes a second error in overtime, and that's minus 5 for him.
Yeah.
And if you take that minus 5 out, he's hit our Mendoza line.
Pretty solid, yeah.
He's having a good day. It's just mental mistakes are cropping up with the frequency you might expect for a new starter in his case or a true sophomore in Bredesen's. So, I mean, it wasn't great, but it was 61%, and that was definitely good enough for the running backs to go do some work. And it was interesting to see that for the second straight week, Michigan split their zone versus gap carries about down the middle.
Yeah.
Like, it was a slight edge to gap stuff, but...
And this time they were blocking both relatively effectively.
Yeah, I mean, inside zone, they had, I think, 12 inside zone or inside zone-ish plays, and 8 of them were successful,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of those were 13, 16, 15-yard chunks. So what they were doing is they were spreading out the Indiana defensive line, and they got some extended doubles on guys, and then when they blitzed, Michigan was able to pick it up and just send guys direct to the second level. So progress, and we've been banging on Tim Drevno for a few weeks now, and the last couple weeks the offensive line has improved. They've managed to get something of a running game together, and the pass protection in this game was, it's kind of an incomplete, right? Because it's only 20 passes. There's so much max protection.
Yeah, it's tough to really issue, especially since Indiana also kind of lacks a pass rush.
But 0 sacks.
I'll take it.
One should have been sacked.
Yeah, Okorn did spin out of one.
But
make his best throw of the day.
You know, we saw Juwan Bushel-Beatty get beat a couple times, but they were like, okay, this guy got inside me, but I'm still pushing him.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting totally wrecked.
I mean, you only give him 2 protection minuses, and that's... for him, we'll take it.
Against any team in any situation, I think that's progress at right tackle. Sustainable progress, I'm not going to say that. But you are seeing the offensive line.
We'll find out a lot more this weekend.
Come together a little bit. They had a good performance last week. They had a decent performance this week. You're seeing the backs be a little bit more aware of where they should go. And Penn State enters this game with a middling run defense.
Yeah.
So possible that Michigan could do some work there and grind out an ugly dub.
Let's hope, because the other options are not very appealing.
No, they are not. Juwan Bushel-Beatty has a presence on the ground.
He moves people.
He does. And he's not perfect, and he's missing some blocks. But when he gets on a guy and he latches on, he and Onwenu next to each other move people.
Yeah, that's a lot of beef.
And on those fourth quarter counter plays, those guys were the point of attack. And on all 3 of those counters, they annihilated a dude and got to the second level. So that is a promising start to we can run power right quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I look forward to.
That would be very nice.
Anything else from a noble 27-20 victory over mighty Indiana?
I've got relatively little.
All right, we are going to take a break. We're going to come back, and it's time to talk mid-season expectations revamp.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It's like a prospecting rave.
Yeah, I feel like I'm about to get into an old-timey bar fight.
Oh, yeah, that's good. The good thing about doing it at a bar is that get to be scared that we're going to destroy the equipment because someone spills a beer. Not you, but this jabroni.
More me. Much more me.
Always be nice to your waitstaff.
This is a very auspicious time to order a beer on my part.
Well done.
That's right as we're heading into
that. At least you
that.
Can't sound any drunker.
Yeah, I'm going
to
pick Patrick.
Oh.
Hey-o.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
I'm the chief enunciator. That's a bad sign if
that's true.
If I'm sounding super drunk all the time.
That's true. All right. It's midseason. Michigan has six games in the books. They are 5-1.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is very upset about this. And I thought we would kind of like sound each other out, just like how we feeling, relative to what we thought before the season. We kind of did a this week's obsession about it, but I don't think I got all my thoughts out.
No, same here.
No, you didn't. So
got some thoughts.
How your feels?
I mean, it's definitely below the defense is probably at or above where I expected
it's gotta be above,
yeah.
Right? Shit.
I mean, the cornerbacks definitely. I mean, we talked about earlier. They're a lot better than we thought they would be.
Yeah, like Zorge is like, these guys suck. I hate these guys.
I mean, I was of the mind, knowing kind of Lavert Hill's background, that I thought Zordich was trying to light a fire on him.
Well, Lavert's fine. His other guys are jabronis.
But, like, yeah, no, this was, I mean, especially, like, we did not expect Watson to come on this strong.
Oh.
We thought, like, I mean, we thought the loss of Keith Washington was going to be a real significant thing, and we have not even really noticed it.
I totally forgot he existed.
Yeah, so that's about where the defense has come.
Oh, right, that guy.
Yeah, so, I mean, and, like, Winovich has been better than expected. Hurst has been every bit as good as we thought he would be. I mean, our expectations for Winovich were high, but he has been awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
Bush came in above expectation. You know, I mean, this is, I mean, maybe the only guys you could say from, like, a counting stat standpoint aren't where we thought they would be are Hudson and Gary. And that's more just the defense being really good as a whole than those guys doing anything wrong.
Yeah, I mean, Hudson had a couple sacks in the game, and now they're just like, why don't you go cover people? And occasionally we'll blitz you. It's not like he needs to be involved in the TFL.
No, he's not exactly getting used like that spot has been used before by Don Brown, because he doesn't need that person to do everything.
Well, and I mean, we're running a 3-3-5.
Yeah, no, it's wild. It's really wild.
Nobody knew about.
Yeah. Now we got, the defense was so banged up that Mo Hurst even saw some time at nose tackle. We didn't really have a hint of that. And it has been better than expected.
So the brilliant part about this is they have Brian Monet, and Brian Monet is a functional player.
Yes.
But a limited player. And he's also 330 pounds, and they don't have any backup for him.
So he's a guy whose snaps you maybe want to limit a little bit, especially given his injury history.
So they gave half his snaps to Noah Furbush, who looked like a fish without a home in a Don Brown defense.
Yeah.
And now he's basically just a defensive lineman on wheels, where you just kind of put him wherever you want in the line.
Yeah, I consider him a defensive fullback.
And it's just a brilliant solution to a problem that Michigan had with DT depth.
Yeah.
And I love Don Brown for many, many reasons, and this is like number two.
Yeah. I mean, busting out the 3-3-5 stack.
Right.
And having it work beautifully.
And watching in the opener, I'm like, I just start laughing because I'm like, this is Rich Rod's defense.
Because, like, not only does it solve your DT depth issue, but it also, like, unlocks Devin Bush, because you're lining him up an extra couple yards off the line of scrimmage, keeping him clean and letting him just go sideline to sideline. And you're making it so, like, you can never really anticipate where a rush is coming from either. And then he gets to do all this funky stuff with weird overloaded fronts and stuff like that.
Yeah, and nobody is able to run inside. That's like, okay, we only have three defensive linemen. Our nose tackle's 280 pounds. We're using a linebacker who's like 250 to make up for that. Okay, where's the weakness?
You would think.
Directly up the gut, let's just run it down their throats.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
No.
So, God bless Don Brown. I think, okay, defensive line, expectations up, down, same.
I think they're even better than I expected, which is really saying something.
I think they're the same, because I expected them to be just completely awesome.
That's fair.
Linebacker level, up, down, same.
Definitely up. I did not think Bush would be this good this quickly. I thought he'd be good, but, yeah. I mean, man, he's been awesome. You know, he's making some appearances on some midseason All-American lists. And McCray, you know, he's had some ups and downs, but for the most part, he's been on the positive side of the ledger.
Quite positive. He had one rough game against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Bizarrely.
Yeah. They got him out in space a few times. And
since then, he's been good. I would say up.
And then we've even seen, like, you know, Devin Gill has looked okay when he's come through and played some snaps. Like, Robo got that forced fumble when he comes in. You know, they do have some functional depth there. They haven't needed it.
No.
But they do seem to have it.
And the secondary, up, down, or the same?
Up.
Very, very
way
up.
Way up. I mean, because, you know, the safeties were also a point of concern, as well as the cornerback. We just had, you know, Tyree Cannell is the old man of this group. And they have been excellent.
Special teams, Quinn Nordine comes in and is immediately, like, the best kicker in the country.
Yeah, so that's an up. Because college kickers, you never know.
But they actually haven't blocked any punts. They may have forced a couple of short ones against Michigan State.
Yeah.
They have the one touchdown return from Donovan Peoples-Jones. They give one up to Indiana. Their kickoff coverage is irrelevant.
It sure
is. Well, it's good because of the Foog.
I mean, old Doug has been killing it on those kickoffs.
The Foog dendrites.
Poor Indiana was getting just demolished at the 15 every time.
You're right. I take that back. Michigan's kickoff return unit itself has been an abomination.
It sure has.
Special teams up, down, same.
I would say same. I thought it would be like somewhat middling, but maybe in a different way.
Okay.
Like place kicking is better than I thought it would be. Punts are probably a little worse because I thought that like having the number one punter would maybe translate a little bit more quickly, but Robbins has been a little inconsistent. Almost because it seems like he's trying. They're trying too much with him sometimes. Like they're trying all these different styles of punts, and it may seem like you want to get a couple of them down first where he's consistent on it. Kickoff returns have been terrible. I expected them to be better there just because the number of athletes on this team. And then with punt returns, Peoples Jones is very good when he gets a crack, but you don't get many of those these days. And Fogue's been awesome. I'd say it's sort of right in the middle for me.
I'd say up just because having a kicker who is not a college kicker.
That is huge, just to have somebody who, like, if he trots out from 40 and in, you don't feel nervous.
40 and in?
I mean, just in terms of, like, he cranks those. Those are no doubters.
And they go right down the tube, right?
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
There's no question that if it's going to go in.
Like, both the kicks against Indiana were 38 and 40 yards out, and I don't remember being so confident in kicks from that distance in a long time.
As soon as they go up, it's clear that they're right
it's
down
like
the
like I grew up with Jason Hansen on the Lions. This is like watching that.
Yeah.
Where you just know. I mean, out to a great distance, it's pretty automatic.
And having that for 4 years is...
And it could come up especially huge this year, given, you know, how Michigan's going to probably be in some close games and how the
hopefully.
Offense has not been super reliable. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully it comes in especially big.
All right, the sad bits. The offense, let's start with the offensive line. How are your feels?
I'd say they're a little bit below expectation. I mean, obviously, like, right tackle we knew was probably going to be problematic, but it's been more problematic, I think, than we, at least as in pass protection.
Yeah. Well, no, both, really.
And I just keep, you know, waiting for him to take that step forward in the run game, and it hasn't quite all. They're starting to make some progress. They certainly have over the last couple of weeks, but I was kind of hoping they'd be where they're at now in the first couple weeks of the season. Seems like the progress is a little bit delayed, but we are seeing some flashes where that could change over the second half of the season because they are getting the man ball-y stuff down a little bit and blocking inside zone a lot better than they were.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also down, obviously. I think the kind of the disappointment is Bredesen a little bit. Like, I was hoping that, you know, Bredesen would be the guy who's kind of popping up on the Pro Football Focus All Big Ten lists.
Sure, yeah.
It's great that Onwenu is, and Bredesen definitely has had his moments. He's much better than he was last year. I don't think there's any question about that. But he's had a fair number of mental mistakes and hasn't been as physically dominant as Onwenu. So Onwenu makes up for his mental mistakes because twice a game he locks onto somebody.
A neutron star.
just throws him into the sideline, so he's got more margin for error. And I was hoping Bredesen would come through a little bit, and then obviously right tackle. I told people that it was going to be a black hole. And, like, my tackle rating in the preview was 2.5 because I was averaging 4 for Mason Cole with 1 for the right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels too optimistic despite that, like, my rating scale only goes down to 1.
Yeah.
I think there was a 0 at some point during the Rich Rod era on defense. Like, there was definitely, like, a 0 at safety.
I mean, yeah. like, that was deserved.
Well, probably
breaking the scale in that era was absolutely the way
but
to go.
I really didn't expect them to go with Elizio if he was as unprepared as he appeared to be.
Yeah.
Because he emerges out of nowhere and he starts, and they had run in there for a large period of time. They had JBB there and...
Yeah, it just seems like Elizio is kind of like the no-win middle ground between Runyon and JBB.
Kinda, yeah.
And that's an odd choice, especially when like you have time in the preseason to maybe see if you can flip Bredesen out and stick somebody at guard. I mean, we talked about this a lot.
I mean, it kind of feels like the coaching staff like was a message board fan talking about a quarterback with right tackle.
Yeah,
where it's like this guy sucks and this guy sucks. I haven't seen anything from this guy. He's probably good.
Yeah.
and that
Where you're just talking yourself into somebody because of the lack of other options
yeah.
there. And yeah, it has not gone great.
No, tight end?
Up. I mean, despite Ian Bunting all but disappearing, McCune's been good, and Gentry being not just like a very viable receiving threat, but a guy who can function as a blocking tight end.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I expected that to happen in his whole career, and certainly not this early. And I kind of expected him to go the Funchess route.
I think my expectations are about level, because I thought between Bunting, Gentry, and McCune and Eubanks that they could find Jake Butt's production and basically match it. And I feel like they've done that.
Yeah.
And Wheatley's been hurt. He's flashed some excellent blocking ability when he's been in there, but I kind of expected that. Like, I was very positive about the tight ends before the season, and I think that I was right.
Yeah, I think you might have just been higher on that position group than I was heading in.
So I was. So I'm going to call that a push. Wide receiver, I didn't even need to ask you about this.
I mean, as it turns out, freshman receivers do suck.
Well,
unless they're Tariq Black, and then them getting hurt really sucks.
Yeah, I mean, you have four bullets who come in. You have the two guys who are there for spring, and you have the one who's clearly ahead of the pack, and he starts off well.
Yep.
And then he's out for most of the year, all of the year, I don't know. But, like, it turns out that's a guy that Michigan could not have lost. And he's been lost. So, going into the season, I was really worried about the depth and the defense. Like, what happens if one guy gets hurt?
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that an injury to a wide receiver could possibly be that devastating, because I thought they'd all be kind of in the same pile.
Yeah, I mean, you think, at the very least, you've got a bunch of talented guys who, there may be some mistakes, but you're still seeing the talent flash through, and instead having the lack of a reliable number one. I mean, I'd say Kakoa Crawford's easily the most disappointing of them all. We should get that out of the way. Like, he was supposed to be kind of like the number one guy that you could at least rely on to be a possession receiver here. And he can't really be relied on for much of anything right now. I mean, he's not really getting open, and he's not catching the ball when he does.
Yeah, it's
I know I sound super harsh on the guy, but it's tough to say nice things about his season so far.
Let's say we're not writing him off yet, but he hasn't distinguished himself from the freshman at all.
No,
And that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're seeing pretty simple mistakes happen. I mean, you're seeing with him now, it seems like some of it's. He's getting a little frustrated with his play. He picks up the bad personal foul against Indiana. That was just completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we knew Peoples-Jones was going to be sushi raw coming out of high school from a route running standpoint because of the offense he was in and the fact that he could just use his athleticism to be amazing in high school without needing the technique down. But it's – I mean, you see, this is, team has showed you why freshman receivers are have a tough time producing because – it's complicated. The timing and the route combinations require, I think, more knowledge and technique than we sometimes give them credit for.
Yeah.
And that stuff really shows up, especially when you have an offensive line that's leaking stuff through where you need guys to maybe make sight reads or come back to the quarterback, do stuff on the fly. We've seen guys have trouble with that. And, like, Perry's really the only guy that they can rely on to be at the right place in the right time and catch the ball right now among the wideouts.
Yeah, and as the kind of corner route earlier demonstrated, he is 5'10".
Yeah. That is a limiting factor. I do expect this group to get better, both because it's going to be hard for them to take a step back, and they are so young that they should have some in-season improvement. But I'm kind of hoping for them to just reach average by the end of the year.
All right, running back. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I'm going to call it a push right now because, first of all, I think more of the early season issues were on the O-line and the backs. And kind of the production that I think heading into the season we were hoping to get out of Chris Evans has now been shifted to Ty Isaac and Karan Higdon in a way that's totally acceptable. Those guys have been running quite well.
Fumbles, though. They've
lost some fumbles. They have also had some unfortunate fumble luck. I think they've lost every fumble they've put on the ground.
The running backs have, yes.
Yeah. So I don't think that would loom as large if, one of them had grabbed a ball back that bounced the right way at one point.
Sure.
And I think it's spread evenly across each of them, too. I think Higdon and Evans and Isaac each have one.
Ty has two.
Isaac has two. I just think, they've been somewhere between acceptable and decent, and once this line gets going, I think we might see them get better than that, and we certainly saw signs of that with Higdon last weekend.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. That pretty much covers it. I mean, I do think I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit more Kareem Walker. I thought his carry was impressive.
Yes.
I'm hoping that they do actually get them more involved in the passing game. I mean, they talked that up all offseason about how Evans was going to have like 30 catches.
And we haven't seen it.
And he has like two.
But, I mean, we might see him get moved around a little bit. We'll see now that Michigan's having so much trouble with the receivers and they've got these other running backs coming up, especially if Walker breaks through too. I mean, that might give them the ability to kind of use Evans as more of a moving piece.
Well, and they put him out there on the edge against Michigan State, and they just kind of throw him that smoke screen.
Yeah.
And he gets Chris Frey he breaks his ankles and picks up like 17 yards.
Like I wouldn't mind seeing that again.
Get him in space and just see what he can do.
Yeah, because especially since, you know, the receiving corps doesn't have a lot of that. I mean, you've got Peoples-Jones, but...
You have McDoom, but...
But he's kind of a, you know, still a bit limited at this point, still a bit of a tip.
If we're talking about, like, dump-offs and screens and, like, little doofy things, then he can do that.
That's true. But if you'd like to be able to do that with your base personnel. And McDoom is kind of just a big flashing sign saying we're about to do some frippery.
I know, but they don't have to give it to him. So, yeah. I don't know. They can run him on a go route and someone has to cover him.
Yeah, just don't throw it.
Just don't freaking throw it. And then,
is that a good transition to the other position we need to do stocks on?
I don't remember any other positions in football.
Fair enough. We've covered them all. Let's move on.
No, we should talk about the quarterback. Obviously, a huge disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, it was a disappointment when Spate was still healthy, and now there's been, I would say, a significant drop-off in terms of ability to run the offense.
And honestly, everything that has gone right has been offset by the fact that their quarterbacks can't get up to 6 yards an attempt.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I thought 10-2 going into the season. And if we had last year's Wilton Spate, I'd be feeling awesome about that.
Yes.
Also, Michigan would be undefeated.
Yeah.
And without that, you know, you're looking at, okay, you're 5-1 already. You got Rutgers. You got Minnesota. You have Maryland. All of whom have as bad quarterback situations or worse than you do.
Yep.
And they don't have this defense. You should win all those games. And then it's about, like, can you steal one from Penn State, Wisconsin, or Ohio State? Can you steal two?
Yeah.
I think all three is a lost cause.
I would agree with that.
But I think they can play well enough to beat one of those teams.
Yeah, and I mean, as we discussed a little bit earlier, there really hasn't been a game in recent memory, a big game where Michigan has had the breaks go their way.
Yeah.
And like, man, with this defense and how good they are and how they're – now they should be forcing a lot of those breaks.
All the small breaks. All the small games.
It feels like they're overdue for one. But we'll see.
You keep waiting for that. You go to the bus stop of Michigan gets the breaks in a big game. And you wait there for the bus. And you tell me how many years it takes for the bus to show up.
You know, believe it or not, I've been hanging around that bus stop a while myself. And it's been bleak. But
I think this is the end of this segment.
I think so, too.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with a gimmicky top five. That's all the things we love about Penn State. No, seriously, that's what we did.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9!
Colby, what about you?
7!
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURELENDING. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. Home Shore Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Will you take a look? Based on a novel by a man named Lear, and I need a job, so I wanna be a paperback writer. Paperback writer.
It's the dirty. Is that a one or a zero?
I don't know, but I know my wife loves it. Never heard that song before, but I guarantee you she's memorized it. Yeah, it's she doesn't listen to this. I can bomb her all I want. That's a good life tip for everybody who's married out there. Make sure your wife doesn't listen to your podcast. Anyway, this is our Gimmicky Top 5 segment. We invite Nick Hopwood of Peak Wealth Management to join us. How you doing, Nick?
Doing well. How about you?
Good.
Excellent.
Are we fired up?
We are.
Okay.
No Eeyore.
No Eeyore. Our Gimmicky Top 5 is our favorite things about Penn State.
Yeah, this could get interesting.
I have some things that I genuinely admire about Penn State.
We're going to, we'll see how this goes.
And Ace has none, apparently. I was trying to have a positive, friendly.
I have like two in here that are pretty nice.
All right, well, we'll start with you, Mr. Eeyore. Ace to number 5.
The 409ers were already people I'm inclined to hate.
Okay, so it's just like a sign that's like, don't be friends with me.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, you've made yourself known. So you made yourself, they usually make themselves quite obvious.
Yes.
And it means I know that I don't need to get within, like, 200 feet of them.
There's a Dimitri Martin joke where he says that all bumper stickers say the same thing to him, and that's, let's not be friends. And it's kind of like that, right?
Yeah. Okay. It's like, you know, if you got a Joe Pa shirt on, I know all I need to know.
I don't need to talk to you.
Yeah.
All right. Nick, you're number 5.
I'm going to go with Joe Paterno's last, like, 40 years because... Because when I was a kid, I grew up a Michigan State fan, if you can believe it, and I had some seats right behind the Penn State at Michigan State bench, behind Penn State's bench. I just focused on Joe Pa for much of the game. The guy didn't have a headset, obviously, and he didn't talk to anybody.
He didn't talk to anybody.
He didn't talk to any players or any coaches for
he
the whole game.
Sat there.
Yeah. He just walked back and forth.
So it's like he's got a sideline pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A really nice one. They usually don't let you that far.
I'm going to go with Joe Pa's last 40 years.
All right. My number 5 is they have their blogs have very accessible language. So, in case you can't pronounce the word touchdown, they'll call it tutties for you and put it on a shirt so you can learn how to spell tutties.
I want that.
It's the blog for the Denard Robinson Cooks of the world.
So there's a Penn State blog that just talks in nonsense the whole time.
Absolute baby talk.
And I like them because also, in addition to being accessible for Penn State fans, I feel like my writing ability is greatly superior to theirs. So it's a confidence booster. Ace number four.
This is actually sort of a real positive one, which is that the line isn't like 1,000 miles long. They have good ice cream.
Oh, they've got like one of those stores.
They got like the creamery,
campus,
yeah. And it's like, it's delicious. The problem is like every time I've been there, the line has been like around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, there's that blank slate place downtown that I'm never going to go to.
I've been there on off hour. It's worth going on off hours.
Okay. Because I walk by it and I'm like, do I want ice cream 3 hours from now? Not really.
Not that badly.
Not that badly.
Yeah.
Nick, you're number four.
I'm going to go with Judgment Day, October 1997. I was a freshman at Bursley. We smoked him like 30-something to 3. I don't
34
know.
To 8.
34 to 8. There you go. We were propelled from like number 4 to number 1.
Right.
And it was awesome. There are many great things about that day at Bursley.
They were a good stepping stool.
Yes.
My number 4 is it's a little bit involved. I just wrote down Jerry DiNardo. Let me explain.
Yeah, this is going to take some explaining.
So I was doing an event in Chicago, and it was like a Q&A thing. Sam was there. I was doing a thing, and Jerry DiNardo came in. And he did his little speech. I did mine. Sam did his Q&A afterwards. Somebody was asking, like, why the Big Ten was down. And I responded, they don't have quality coaching. You know, you look at Michigan, they're struggling. You look at Penn State, Joe Paterno hasn't really been plugged into that program for 25 years. And DiNardo just shut up. And he was just like, he was so angry at me for saying a blatantly obvious thing
yes.
about Joe Paterno that Nick has already covered.
Yeah.
And I was very uncomfortable for a long period of time, but I managed to annoy Jerry DiNardo. And since he's annoyed me so often,
you're taking that as positive.
I feel like Penn State gave me the opportunity for a measure of revenge.
Fair enough.
I feel like he hasn't been on the BTN so much lately. Is that just me?
I don't know. Has he?
Yeah, I almost never watch BTN studio shows, to be honest. So I can't say I've tracked DiNardo.
I don't know either. Ace, number 3.
Both the stadium and the kind of tailgating around it, I just, you know, I went there as a fan in 2008, which was a bad decision, but I did get the tailgating experience. And just kind of, you know, just like huge parking areas around the stadium. The stadium's kind of up on top of this hill.
Yeah.
It's got like this very kind of foreboding feel to it, and that does not change when you go in because, I mean, they do the whiteout thing. They've got, it's not a huge bowl. You've got the levels to it. It's loud.
This isn't sarcastic at all.
No, it isn't. Don't worry, the rest of mine will be.
Okay.
It's a cool stadium to go to as a fan and check out, and they do bring it as a fan base for big games. They really do.
Nick, you're number 3.
My number 3 is the 9 wins in a row. We were talking about this before the recording started.
Yeah.
We maybe won the first one, then lost a couple. And then from 97 until 07, we won 9 yeah. straight. So I feel like we own them.
The real heyday of the zombie nation, we own Penn State chant.
Yeah, we own them, yes.
So, which I look forward to renewing in the future should we ever be so fortunate.
We're on a 3-game win streak right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we?
Yes.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we won. The year we lost to Maryland and Rutgers, we ended up beating Penn State.
Well, their hockey team annihilated us, so I can't do it.
You're the only one who would make that equivocation.
No, you know, you felt it when they did it, because it was just like, you just felt gross for a day, even though you didn't watch the game. My number 3 is no uniforms with a Z.
Fair.
They
barely even have a uniforms with an S.
They're one of those teams like Alabama, Texas. They're just like, nah, we're good. We're not going to wear, like, alligator costumes. We're not going to, like, wear libertarian female costumes. I saw a tweet where, like, there was a Katniss Everdeen costume that was, like, libertarian female because it was unlicensed.
Okay. There was like the Northwestern like Renaissance Fair uniforms from a couple years back.
So I appreciate the fact that, you know, the only thing they've ever done to the uniforms is they put the names on them after the horrible thing so that people wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
And then they took them back off.
Yep.
So I appreciate a boring outfit.
Yeah.
Could I sound any older?
No.
I could try. Asian number two.
The frequency with which they lose to Michigan.
Ah.
That's my number two. I mean, I think we've mostly gone over it. I grew up during the nine-win period, so I'm used to it.
Nick, you're number two.
I'm going to go with confusion around the name of State College, Beaver Stadium, College Park. I mean, what is it?
Well, College Park is Maryland?
Well, there's State College. Yeah, State College. But then,
State
like, yeah.
State College.
State College.
Okay, help me out then here.
I don't know. So Happy Valley?
So there's, like, Happy Valley is the region.
Yeah, that's
State
it.
College
that's
is
the
town.
I'm gonna cross out College Park and add Happy Valley.
Right.
And I don't know how it works. It's nobody. There's just too many of them.
Ace. Nobody knows.
No, that's the whole point.
my number two is that going to Penn State was preparation for the great brandoning of Michigan Stadium.
Mm.
I can sound older. I'm doing it right now. So I go there for 06, and I'm like, this is the chintziest thing in the world. And the only thing that they're doing now that we're not doing is they still have the cat that goes...
Yeah. And thankfully, Wolverines don't have a noise.
I'm waiting for that, though. They're cat-like enough that we're going to have the same thing that Northwestern has. Why is it the same for everybody?
And it's just... Also, why is it totally unintimidating? It's, like, that's the thing I don't get. It's that does not scare me.
It is definitely like queer Nittany Lion for the straight Nittany Lion. Like, I'm not talking, like, I'm just talking about that show. It has the,
yes.
That show.
That affect.
Yes.
The noise has that. Yeah.
You looked very terrified where that was going.
There was a moment there where I wasn't sure.
You were like, oh, God, it's all coming to an end right now.
Does he, like, breathe,
well, I have a job
does he
next
breathe
week.
Fire or something? Just the sound? That's it?
It's just the sound. I mean, I knew what we were in for as soon as I went to Penn State. And, like, Brandon was like, yeah, they do a really great job. And I was like,
Here we go. Seven Nation Army.
So they let me down easy, I guess. They prepped me. Ace, you're number one.
James Franklin's sad field goal. Just
an excellent, excellent choice.
That's it. It was so perfect.
And also the Harbaugh gif resulting from the
Oh, absolutely. Just Harbaugh. I had like three different gifs of Harbaugh looking incredulously at Penn State sideline after that because they kept cutting back to him and he kept getting more incredulous. It's beautiful.
And didn't Franklin call a timeout a couple weeks ago to ice the kicker?
Oh, yeah. Against like Georgia State.
It was
State.
Like 56 to the zero and they were icing the kicker.
He also had the timeout to avoid a half-yard penalty for the delay of game in the worst game-managed game of all time, possibly. I still enjoy James Franklin's game management.
There was that period where we're like, is Franklin a worse coach than Hoak, or is Hoak a worse coach than Franklin?
Mm. And then Franklin hired Joe Moorhead.
A question that is now resolved.
Yes, we no longer have to discuss it.
Nick, you're number one.
Well, I think it kind of piggybacks on Ace's number three. I'm going to go with the whole parking situation. I've never been to a game in, we'll say, Happy Valley. But last summer we bought a travel trailer, an RV, a recreational vehicle.
Wait, your parking's number one and you've never been there?
Because I want to go there. I want to take the RV there. But and there's nowhere to park it because all they changed the parking. It's unavailable for me. So.
And that's your favorite thing about Penn State?
Yeah. I'm mad.
Their lack of parking.
I'm angry.
Oh, yeah. So this is like sarcastic.
This is sufficient.
Yes.
I got
you. Thank you.
This is sufficient motivation.
You guys are not going to believe my number one.
Oh, no.
It's parking. And Wi-Fi.
Unbelievable.
Because I have been there, and you drive up, and you get off the freeway.
And you're there.
And you're there, and you're also on, like, the edge of a vast, like, plain of grass.
Yeah.
So you just park on the vast plain of grass, and then after the game, you get in your car, and you get on the highway, and you're done. That's it. There's no traffic. Yeah. And then the last time I went, I had the most beautiful Wi-Fi signal I've ever had in my life. Cellular signal.
Mm.
Not Wi-Fi. I sat there, and I looked at my phone, and I had five bars, and I wept with joy.
At a football game.
Until 27 for 27 kind of wiped that smile off my face. But I could tweet out my feelings.
So that there, was, there were some feelings.
So, Nick, Peak Wealth Management is a company that, let me guess, manages wealth.
Yes, sir.
What do you do? Like, what is your, like, how do you, what's going on, man? I'm good at this.
It's a good question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think it all comes down to making good decisions, Brian. Just like you've done. Making good decisions.
You looked at me very accusingly. You're like, making good decisions?
It's like when I was a kid. I grew up, I witnessed people that I care about making bad decisions.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to put my retirement at risk. And then you kind of pay that forward. When you start realizing what are good decisions, you can help people make good decisions for themselves. So my goal when people walk out the door is to make sure that they understand that they're on the right track. And if they're not on the right track right now, they can make, with specific direction, changes to get back on track.
So if you have a small child and you want to set up a college fund,
we can help
529?
You. Correct.
Okay, I think I might
You started thinking about this.
I think I might need to talk to him.
That's a very smart move. Yes.
Yeah, talk to this guy. So anybody who needs to know about 529s or IRAs or retirement.
Shoot, I might need to talk to him too.
That's right.
I'm glad that you actually can save money. That's nice.
Yeah, right?
I mean.
It's good stuff.
It's good stuff.
And you need to work with a certified financial planner.
A certified?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what's the certification?
Well, it's like taking 3 years of classes and passing a class, kind of like the bar. Passing a test, kind of like the bar.
So it's pretty hardcore.
It's hardcore, yeah. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they only offer this test in the spring and in the fall. And of course, the time when I was ready to take it in 2005 was in the fall on Ohio State game day.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Mm. So it was.
So you were dedicated to your craft.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I can remember, you know, the anxiety of, do I take the test now in November or do I punt 6 months and go through six more months of studying? But I had to get it done.
Yeah.
So,
all right,
that's one of those good life decisions that you're talking about, right?
I get in the car after the test. We're winning by 10. We lose. Mm. 2005.
Well, at least you won the test.
I did. But at that moment, I felt like I lost the test too. But, you know, when it's a hard test, you're always worried about the result. Mm-hmm.
All right, Nick Hopwood of Peak Wealth Management. You have a website?
PeakWM.com.
There you go. Hit them up. And, of course, we love all our sponsors. And if you love us and you don't use him for your wealth management, we will be very sad.
Mm-hmm.
So go do it. All right, we're going to get one more break in, and we're going to come back and talk about Penn State.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I'm back in the USSR. Until I look you up. Back in the US. Back in the US. Back in the USSR. All the Ukraine girls really knock me out. They leave the West behind. The Moscow girls make me sing and shout.
Very, who's the weird guy? The weird guy.
Weird Al?
No, not Weird Al. The weird guy with the piano. With a growly voice. Last Heart of Saturday Night. Tom Waits.
Oh, Tom Waits.
A little Tom Waitsy.
A little bit.
Not at all ravey.
No.
Speaking of raves.
He needs to sound more like gravelly for me to get the Tom Waits comparison.
Well, he's fine.
Tom Waits sounds like he just like ate a pack of cigarettes.
Well, I didn't say it was. Anyway, speaking of raves, Lantana yellow lentil hummus that Seth already got into, a hint of spiciness and topped with sunflower seeds and apricots. This one's a good one, too. It's like it's spicy and it's also sweet, mm-hmm. but subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Nick's into it. Like, he shows up and he's like, this is good. I used to eat like Costco hummus, but now I know that that's made of cats, and I'm not going to do that anymore because I'm sick of murdering cats just to put something on some bread or some stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to add?
No, I think we've covered it.
I think you covered it?
The important bits.
Check out all of their flavors at lantanafoods.com and find it at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocery.
All right.
Penn State.
Well, I've focused more on the defense than the offense so far because I fell a little behind this week. But that part is not encouraging for Michigan because their defense is very good.
How is it very good? They seem that they were just going to be kind of middling.
They're really stout up front. I like both their defensive tackles quite a bit. The very confusingly named Cothran and Cothran, their names are spelled different and they play differently, but they're both quite good. One of the Cothrans is more of like a, you know, two gap plug up the middle, make life hard on the offensive lineman type guy.
Okay.
The other one's more like a one gap slash into the backfield, make some TFLs type, but they complement each other quite nicely. They've had a few other defensive linemen emerge because they lost their starting ends from last year, and that seemed like that might be a spot where it'd be a weak point. But Sharif Miller has really come on strong. He's already got 8 run stops at or behind the line of scrimmage. He had an awesome game against Iowa. Pulled down Akram Wadley for a safety on a toss play that they called from the one, which was maybe not the best call, but it was a very athletic play by Sharif Miller.
Is he getting to the quarterback?
Not a ton. I mean, most of their ability to get to the QB is based on blitzing. So that's really the, thankfully for Michigan, the kind of the weak point of their defense is that they don't have much of an organic pass rush. And in fact, their best rush package is when they get opponents in a third and long, and they're able to bring in Kevin Givens at DT, who's he had kind of a Hurstian pressure rating last year as a redshirt freshman. And he's still a limited player. They still mostly use him as just a pass rush specialist, but he's a guy where if you single him up on the inside, and Iowa tried that once, he beat a guy pretty badly and forced an incompletion. So you can get a little bit from that, but mostly they're blitzing in order to get pressure on the quarterback, but they're good at it. They bring pressure from all angles. They have a top five havoc rate from their top 3 havoc rate from their defensive backs, and that's not all just knocking balls away.
Okay.
So they will blitz the defensive back from the slot a lot. They'll blitz those overhang linebackers. Brent Pry gets creative in figuring out ways to put some pressure on. They're a little pliable up front. It didn't show against Iowa, mostly because Iowa was trying to zone stretch them to death.
Iowa's been so bad on the ground the whole year.
Yeah. But I also took – I mean, I've watched them against Indiana and Northwestern as well this year. Obviously not great offenses, any of them.
Yeah.
But neither is Michigan. And none of them were really able to get consistent work done against Penn State on the ground, and that's a little worrisome because their pass defense has been awesome.
But they're still not—they're not grading out that well as a run defense, right? They're like 40th or something.
Yeah, they're 44th, but they're 10th in success rate.
So they're busting.
They'll occasionally bust something big.
Okay.
But they're 15th in stuff rate. Like they will hit you in the backfield a fair amount.
Okay.
They're good up front. They will sometimes get caught when they get a little over aggressive, and I think that's where some of the big plays come in. But it's. The Iowa game was a little bit depressing to watch because they weren't able to get anything going through the air, and Penn State started playing defense like Air Force does, where their linebackers and safeties are stepping forward at the snap, and that just ruined Iowa's running game, and they weren't able to effectively counter that until way late, and it was really too late by then. But they,
not too late.
Yeah.
Too early, in fact.
But this was a game where, I mean, when I go over Penn State's offense, it'll become clear that Penn State should have won this game by multiple scores, but turnovers kept Iowa in this.
Yeah. I mean, Penn State gained like 600 yards against them.
Yeah, this was a defensive effort that should have resulted in a multi-score victory. And it's going to take some RPS things to really kind of get to them because, I mean, and that's how Iowa did it late is they caught Penn State trying something cute by playing their strong side end as a defensive tackle, opened up a huge gap and got a touchdown that way on the ground. And the other one was a screen pass that caught Penn State in the blitz. And then their backup safety did a poor job of trying to hold down Akram Wadley in the open field. But
they're not that burly on the defensive line. Do you think like Onwenu and JBB could like move guys?
Yeah, I think they could do that a little bit with the strong side end Buchholz. I mean, he's just a redshirt sophomore. He's 275 pounds and he's playing strong side end. I think you can move that guy a little bit. I was hoping to see more of Sharif Miller get moved off the ball, but he just seems pretty darn good.
Okay.
And their tackles both run a little bit over 300 pounds and are pretty stout inside. So straight up the gut's going to be tough, especially since they've also got Jason Kabinda, their middle linebacker, firing into gaps. I mean, this is a good defense. It's top 10 national defense.
So, they have a couple of stars in their secondary. Grant Haley who's the guy from Maryland a few years ago?
Will Likely?
Yeah, he's just Will Likely, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's more of a pure outside guy. Well, he can play the slot, too, but, you know, Will Likely was kind of a pure nickel by the end of his career.
Yeah.
Haley, I still don't know entirely how he does it because the Iowa game, they didn't even test him, and we had one of those ESPN producers who didn't feel like showing the secondary too often.
Yeah.
But opponents have a passer rating of 6.7 targeting him, which at that point you should just spike the ball. So he's been really good this year. He's either been really good or really lucky.
Okay, hear me out, though. Wide receiver Zach Gentry.
I'd like that matchup. The problem is they also have a 6'1 corner in Christian Campbell who they could theoretically put on such a wide out.
Okay. And wide receiver Zach Gentry, and then on the other side, wide receiver Nick Eubanks. Or Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yeah, I could.
Maybe. I'd like less to see, insanely.
Yeah, I mean, if they can get a matchup where they get a big guy on Haley and a fast guy on Campbell, that's kind of how you want it to shake out. Campbell's a taller corner and kind of in that Jeremy Clark, Channing Stripling mold where you might be able to get on top of him. You might catch him. Yeah, you might catch him trying to use his length a little bit too much. He's definitely the guy that opponents try to go at more, but opponent passer rating against him is hanging around 45, so that's not great either.
Okay, but like, who they played? Like, Iowa?
They have not played a impressive slate of offenses.
Clayton Thorson?
They played Pitt. They played Akron. They played Georgia State. And they played Indiana Northwestern. I mean,
they haven't seen the likes of John O'Korn. That sounded better in my head.
I'm sure it did. So it's... I mean, it's going to be tough sledding against these guys. I think it's going to come down to whether Michigan breaks a couple big plays. I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to consistently grind it out. And then it comes down to either having a new play on the ground that you break out like they did last week where they had that counter work so well, or getting Peoples Jones over the top of somebody, or getting a screen that gets a big game, some sort of misdirection. They do get aggressive, and they do get even more aggressive when they think that you can't pass. I get the feeling they're going to get that feeling. So Michigan might catch them when that starts happening, but it's really going to take some rock, paper, scissors wins. And
hitting a deep shot.
And like connecting when you get those, because Michigan's going to have a few chances to make things happen in this game.
All right, other side of the ball, obviously the headliner is Saquon Barkley, but I mean, the last couple of games, Barkley hasn't even cracked 100 yards. Like, Northwestern bottom up.
Indiana bottom up.
I mean, this kind of points back to their offensive line just still isn't where it really needs to be, right?
Yeah, no, they've had trouble there. They've had three different starters already at right tackle.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. So that has been denoted as a sore spot in the film chart that'll go up tomorrow. And nobody on that offensive line that really stands out is excellent either. So there are plays where, their offensive line will kind of get reset into the backfield because they're not super strong up front. And there are busted assignments out there too. So they've been trying out some new things. But, I mean, Saquon Barkley has to make a lot happen on his own. The problem is he's incredibly capable of doing
it. I mean, it sounds familiar. That's what he did last year. Michigan bottled him up and then, you know, they pop him out of the backfield and get him on McCray, and that's like a 30-yard chunk before halftime.
Yeah, and they've been using him a ton as a receiver this year. So Michigan's going to have to be very aware of their matchups.
How many catches does he have?
He has 29 on 32 targets.
Good God.
And he's averaging 13.6 yards a catch. So I don't know what you do about that, because it's hard to stop him from catching the ball because they run him on a little flare or a screen or whatever. You're not going to cut that off.
I mean, just have Devin Bush follow him around, I guess?
I think that's what you got to do. he's a bona fide Heisman contender for
a
reason.
I mean, you can't get like 58 yards against Indiana and be a Heisman contender when Bryce Love is setting everybody's face
on
fire.
Man. He's averaging 6.4 yards a carry behind this line.
What is Bryce Love averaging?
Probably over 10 yards a carry. It's ridiculous.
What do Heisman voters look at?
I mean, just the numbers. But they also go to bed at like 10 o'clock Eastern. Yeah. So, I don't know, man. I don't know, especially with the Stanford team that isn't like climbing up the polls.
Yeah.
Regardless, Barkley is getting billed as like a top five pick in the NFL draft next year, and if I was an NFL team, I'd break the like don't draft a running back high mold to get him.
So
he's really freaking good.
Their passing game has kind of taken a step back from last year in terms of just raw big play output.
It has. They haven't really been able to replace Chris Godwin as a pure just obvious downfield threat who's going to win a ton of jump balls. And Mike Gesicki has taken a step back this year. He's only averaging 6.3 yards a target, and he was somebody last year who was a real downfield threat for him. So I don't know what the deal is with whether he's hurt or whether something's holding him back, but he hasn't been the reliable big play guy that they've been used to. They have had Juwan Johnson emerge. He was kind of the star of spring. He caught the winning touchdown against Iowa. He's a 6'4", 225-pound receiver. He's very much in the Godwin mold, and he's been coming on strong of late. So we'll see. He could eventually be that guy, but he's not at Godwin's level yet, and that was kind of a one-for-one replacement for them. And the rest is like Deshaun Hamilton's a good slot receiver who is also kind of dangerous downfield. DeAndre Tompkins and Saeed Blacknall don't look similar, but they're kind of interchangeable at the other outside spot. They've got some talent, but they definitely lost something with Godwin.
So, I mean, this offense feels like one that Michigan can shut down.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's going to be, like, can Barkley do something ridiculous? Can McSorley hit a deep shot? Versus pretty much kind of the same thing on the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd give Penn State.
What worries me is Penn State's dudes are much more likely
right,
to
hit those. Right, yeah, exactly. But this is going to be like a rock fight with some explosive plays.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that really bothers me about Penn State is their punter.
Blake Gillikin is really good.
And
really, really good.
He's got like that like side spin thing when he needs like a punt that gets down to the five.
Yeah, he'll put some English on it. He's pinned, let's see, 12 punts inside the 20 out of his 26.
How many touchbacks?
Just two.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he's forced 9 fair catches. I mean, he's averaging 44 yards a boot, so it's not like he's got a...
That's insane.
Yeah, he might be an All-American. I mean, he might be the Ray Guy Award winner this year.
And you know that there's going to be a ton of like punt exchanges in this game.
Yeah.
And Michigan's been okay, decent, but it feels like they're going to be kind of like running uphill whenever they have to get the ball back.
Yes. Now, on the flip side, their kicker, Tyler Davis, is 6 for 13.
Oh.
And in a matchup against Quinn Nordin in a game that might be low scoring.
Oh, my God. We're going to win this like 9-6.
I'll take it. I'd take it right now.
Morris disagrees.
Oh, my goodness. I would love it.
We're going to win it 9-6, and they're going to miss 3 field goals.
I mean, it's not the craziest prediction out there with these two defenses and the kickers that are involved. But, you know, I do kind of expect either McSorley or Barkley to reach the end zone at some point.
Nah.
But, I mean, one big thing for Michigan is just going to be to make sure not to let McSorley break the pocket.
They've been pretty good about that this year.
They have been. But McSorley's a more dangerous downfield guy.
What's up, Nick?
Couldn't you see it going just like the Iowa-Penn State game?
Except
for we're a little bit better than Iowa.
Well, I mean, they went up and down the field against Penn State. I mean, against Iowa. Like, they had 600 yards offense, and then Iowa got lucky.
Yeah, so, there were just some – I mean, one way that Iowa was able to stay in that was with a couple of bad Penn State turnovers, and I could see that part coming through if Michigan is able to consistently keep McSorley in the pocket and pressure.
And Michigan doesn't turn the ball over. So
yeah, sure. Yeah, right.
That'll be wonderful. I mean, I think it'll be competitive on total yardage. And then it's like, can they hit Peoples-Jones downfield more than Barkley breaks loose? And, like, I give Penn State the advantage there. But it feels like a game where it's
going to rest on a handful of plays.
If it's not 9-6, it's like 21-17 or 28-17.
Could we give up 28 points? You know, I mean, our defense has been so good.
Not unless the defense is scoring some touchdowns themselves, or the special teams comes through.
He just means like, can they give up 28 points? I mean, I would expect them to come in lower just because.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, Michigan's done a great job at preventing Barkley from breaking loose even last year. And, like, he's had his struggles against Northwestern and Indiana. Like, now what's going to happen? And, like, watch, he has, like, 370-yard runs now. But, like, it's all going to depend on, like, whether Saquon Barkley breaks that last tackle.
Yeah. Or, like, Kinnell flies in too hot on an ankle tackle attempt. Or
just hot enough.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, like.
Hoping for that.
I think Penn State should be favored in this game, and I expect them to win. But, like, if Michigan has like their first drive and they hit a deep one to Donovan Peoples-Jones and it's 7-0, well, now it's game on.
Yeah. Like, if Michigan's able to get themselves out to an early lead, that'd be huge for just being able to kind of sit on it.
Right, yeah, and just see what happens. And I mean, I went from thinking this is a 60% Michigan win in the preseason to being like, okay, it's 40%, it's 35%, but I do think Michigan has a solid shot at winning this game. They just need two big plays.
Yeah, I think it's about a 1-3 shot.
No.
But
crazier things have happened.
Crazier things
have usually against
happened.
Northwestern.
Yep.
You know, the Gillikin thing just kind of looms.
It does. If it's a field position game, that's a huge
especially after the Iowa game last year, where Golden God Ron Caluzzi
just totally flips a game.
Gonna get punted out of a playoff spot again. Not that we were going to the playoff.
No.
That's life. You beat Indiana. You beat Northwestern with the craziest crap you can think of. And then you get punted out of the national championship. That's life, man.
That's life. We would like to thank our sponsors. They are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshire Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.